Not sure if I've seen data on this, but has it been looked at with HER2 negative disease?
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting finding, was that in the original trial, in this phase one trial, there was a cohort of patients with HER2 low disease. And what we mean by HER2 low are non-amplified, but either 1+ or 2+ HER2 expression by IHC. And somewhat surprisingly, there was quite a bit of activity in that population as well, with a response rate of over 40%. And that's been now the motivation for a large randomized trial in HER2 low patients, comparing this drug versus treatment of physicians, you know, chemotherapy of physician's choice in pretreated, largely ER positive HER2 low patients. If that's borne out in that registrational trial, it really is a true game changer because, you know, right now we don't think of those patients as anything other than HER2 negative because from a practical standpoint, whether you're 0 or 1+ or 2+ doesn't matter. We don't treat them with HER2 directed therapy. If this trial, this phase 3 trial shows benefit of trastuzumab deruxtecan in that HER2 low population, it really creates a whole new breast cancer subtype. And there's another HER2 conjugate that's also seen some activity in HER2 low patients as well. So it may not be unique to this drug.
So I'm curious how many patients have been treated who previously progressed on T-DM1. Actually, this woman progressed on T-DM1. And it looks like she didn't have much of a response either.
No, she didn't. And she did respond earlier to other HER2 therapies, but she had virtually no response to T-DM1. And that phase one trial I told you about with the 60% response rate, that was all patients who had had prior T-DM1. Wow. And 60% had also had prior pertuzumab, and that didn't seem to affect the response rate at all. That also was 60%. So this drug does seem to have activity regardless of prior therapy. It's really impressive in that way.
So where was this woman's disease when she got treated and what exactly happened?
So this particular patient had mostly lung disease, which is a little unusual for HER2 positive cancers, which typically goes to the liver as well. Her disease was mostly in the lung and her burden of disease wasn't that great, but she was having some pulmonary symptoms. And, you know, now her lesions have shrunk and her pulmonary symptoms have largely gone away. Her cough is gone. She's got no dyspnea. And in fact, she's a runner and she's been running. It's funny. She complains. Sometimes she complains about fatigue. And she says, you know, she's only been able to run 5 miles, five miles, 3 or 4 times a week, which, you know, makes me look like a weakling. But no, so she's, you know, now that the nausea has been controlled, her quality of life is pretty good, and she's really not limited by her cancer or by the drug, which, of course, is what we want to see.
So you don't have to hear about too many cases like this to be thinking about using it, because now you're talking about just using a treatment by itself. You're not adding something on. It's just this drug. And you don't have to hear too many cases like this to maybe be thinking about for your patient. Is there a compassionate use protocol right now?
As far as I know, there's not a compassionate use study, but the company has announced that they're accelerating their BLA submission to the FDA. And so I think they're hoping there's a phase 2 trial that's completed enrollment that they're going to use for submission for accelerated approval. And they're hoping to get that submitted before the end of the year. So, I think the hope is that this drug will become available, you know, in the relatively near future and will not have to wait for the several phase 3 trials that are going on right now.
Yeah, I always think about the ibrutinib versus chlorambucil trial. Do we really need to do that in CLL? And how many cases do you need to hear like this? But I guess that's just the issues in terms of the regulatory system.